You're listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 305, brought to you by the New York Comic Con. The iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 305. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Hello.
iFanboy.com is our website. And
we weren't saying hello to you, Josh. It was the people. Couldn't care less.
Exactly. I'm looking away. I'm looking in the other direction.
This is like the make Josh feel bad-a-thon. I hate it. I love you guys. Not you two. Other people.
Oh,
not all of you. iFanboy.com is our website. It's about comics who love us back. Maybe they don't. We read comics every week. A lot of them come out on Wednesday. Some Wednesdays are slightly less than others, but are still more than you wanted them to be. And we pick the best comic that came out that week. One of us does and calls it the pick of the week. A review goes up on Wednesday night or sometimes afternoon, not this week. And we come and talk about it on the show here, along with other comics from the week and some other stuff, some ephemera, some things. And before we get started, we're going to be talking about what happens in the books. So if you haven't read them, yada, 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 you are warned. At the end of the show, we're going to tell you a little bit about the New York Comic Con, which will be coming up right after you listen to the show, and quite frankly, sooner than I thought. But before that,
it snuck up on us this time, didn't it?
Boy, didn't it? It's now. Okay. Well, Connor, you've got the pick. I'm going to be packing.
I wrote my review that I had a long day Wednesday. Had a whole day planned where I was going to get my books in the middle of the day, have a nice leisurely read, write the pick of the week, and that just didn't happen. I ended up running all over town, spending a lot of money on car parts, and doing it all in the pouring rain. So that was fun. So then when I got home from doing all that stuff, I just wanted to read my books and relax and have a fun time. And as I went through my stack of books, I just was so happy reading OMAC number 2. And it's a real surprise. I'll be honest. No one was more surprised than me that this was the pick of the week, that I'm even reading this series, because when that initial list of DC books came out, OMAC wasn't even on the radar. You know, this was a book co-written by Dan DiDio, for God's sakes. And I really enjoyed the first issue, and the more I thought about it and talked to people about it and read it again, the more I enjoyed the first issue. The second issue to me was just more super fun, and I think that's what I was looking for Wednesday. Was I just wanted to have a really good time, and OMAC is not just, I'm not just saying it was a fun time. It actually does a lot of things really well in terms of comic book creation. It's co-written by Dan DiDio and Keith Giffen. Keith Giffen draws it in the Kirby style. We're going to get to the art in a minute, but story-wise, yes, okay, yes, it's very much the Hulk. We'll just get that out of the way. It's at this point in time, OMAC has turned, this guy turned into OMAC. He's roaming the country, and he doesn't want to be OMAC, but he is, and he turns into OMAC when there's danger, and he fights.
Yeah,
it's very much the Hulk.
I could see that. It's the Hulk in that, but once he turns into OMAC, it's different enough where it's not the total carbon copy.
Sure, no, but yeah. The sort of setup, at least of this issue, where he walks into the small town, and there's trouble, and he becomes OMAC to fight that trouble, is very much the Hulk, and that's fine. There's a lot of tropes that are used over and over again.
Question, when you finish the issue, should you play the piano music?
I always do, with every issue.
Just making sure.
Ron, you're always the guy who defends that it's not that thing. It'll be like, well, you know, Nova's just Green Lantern. You're like, no.
It's different. It's a little different.
It's not. It never is. There's four stories, and we've told them.
Ron read this with Josh. Did you read the OMAC?
Did not.
Oh.
Okay. This is right up your alley.
This is so bizarre. Up your alley.
Story-wise, Keith Giffen and Dan DiDio, and I don't know who to give more credit to, and I'm not going to give more credit to one.
Actually, I wanted to make a note on that, actually, because I've done some investigation, and from the people inside the DC that I've spoken to, they said, don't underestimate DiDio's contribution to this. A lot of people are saying that Giffen is carrying DiDio here, but apparently DiDio's doing a lot of the heavy lifting on the story and the writing side of things. So,
Then I applaud him, because I've read other comics by him before and have not liked them, but this is actually very, very good.
I've written the script. Why can't we... I can't do it.
That was a mix of both.
It was.
It's very old school. There's a lot of action going on. There's a lot of intrigue. You're dealing with Cadmus Labs, who created OMAC, who's secretly being run by Checkmate, is secretly being run by Maxwell Lord in a great final page reveal. And you've got a lot of information with the OMAC itself talking, or the Brother Eye talking to OMAC, who Brother Eye runs the OMAC nanobytes or whatever that have created OMAC. And you've got a lot of intrigue in the background, sort of political, shadowy organizational intrigue, juxtaposed with this one guy who's been turned into OMAC against his will and is wandering to a small town, stumbles across another Cadmus monster and fights it. And it's a very elegantly put together, and there's a lot of information and a lot of dialogue, and you don't, this is one of those books where you definitely don't feel like you've been cheated out of your $2.99 because there's a lot going on here story-wise. And it's a lot of fun story stuff, and it's just a lot of, and the first issue was the most giant fight scene, and this issue we have more giant creatures fighting each other, which is appropriate for this book. Now, art-wise, Keith Giffen is doing his best Kirby, and it's some of the best Kirby aping I've seen in a while.
Better than Tom Scioli?
Yeah, it's better than Tom Scioli. Absolutely. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why we said this is up your alley. It captures that feeling of Kirby and the look of Kirby without it just being a complete carbon copy. I mean, there's a little bit of Keith Giffen in there. I mean,
the layouts of the last one were very Keith Giffen.
Yes, but this is, it's not as dynamic because it's hard to be as dynamic as Jack Kirby. He is one of the best at dynamism, but in terms of
being dynamic,
right? In terms of the look and the feel of the way that the sort of heavy Kirby shading, which it doesn't get talked about a lot in when people, you know, homage Kirby, or the way he draws the people, the hands, and there's Kirby dots in here. I mean, this is totally and completely 100%, and because Kirby created OMAC, and I don't have a problem. Normally, people homage stuff in like a panel or two, it's fine, but if they're doing it as a art style for a complete series, I might have a problem with it. For some reason, I think it's okay here. I think it's a very much of a throwback book. It's Keith Giffen, who's very much of a throwback guy. He's one of the older creators out there, doing a tribute to a creator who deserves as many tributes as possible with his character. You know, in a modern book, who would have thought we would have had an OMAC book in 2011, but we do. So
For now.
Well... I think right now we think every book is somewhat safe considering the order numbers we've seen. So I had the most fun. There's some great art. There's the final shot of Maxwell Lord as a Maxwell Lord you've never seen before. He doesn't look at anything like the ones we've seen in other issues. He looks exactly like a Kirby drawing. He's got a giant forehead and sort of puffy features. And
some sort of virtual collar.
Yes. There's lots of great technology. There's lots of great crazy technology. It is a virtual collar. It doesn't make sense to say it, but it is.
The DC Universe has introduced the virtual collar now.
They have. It's like a holographic collar. It's amazing.
They're really into collars.
Yeah, this is Connor. I gotta share your enthusiasm for it. This is just like it's funny because I remember when the first issue came out. I was like, I don't know about the story, but I'm totally digging on the art. This I sat on the couch and I got sucked in by the story.
Yep,
it was just, you know, and the art looks great, and and you're right. I mean, like it's almost like Kirby-esque is now a genre or a category,
yes.
And it's not a knockoff or anything like that. They're just doing their best Kirby style kind of story, which is which I would take any day when it's done as well as this is. I mean, this Keith Giffen is doing amazing, and I think this is gonna be around for a while because a lot of people are digging it.
Yeah, and there's elements of Hulk, there's elements of Booster Gold in the relationship between Brother Eye and OMAC, like the Skeets Booster Gold relationship. There's a little bit of Firestorm in there in the way they bicker, which is also a little bit of Nova. I mean, there's lots of great little elements in here put together into something that's a lot of fun. It is unlike every other book, not only in the DC universe at the moment, but every other book I'm reading across every publisher that I'm reading. Tons of fun, packed full of action and dialogue. It's great.
Is it taking place in the main DC universe?
Mm-hmm. As far as we know. Everything is taking place in the main DC universe.
So you got to wonder, how is Maxwell Lord going to play into Justice League International, maybe? Or are they just going to keep him out here? Like, it opens up all these different possibilities.
Yeah. He is the secret. It takes elements from previous stories. Brother Eye, Maxwell Lord, Checkmate, all were together in the previous DCU. They're together here. They're secretly running Cadmus. Plus, it takes the look and feel of the original OMAC. So it takes all the OMAC, because OMAC has been used a couple times throughout DC Comics. The look of the character is very much the original Kirby OMAC, but the setup in terms of Cadmus created this OMAC, Brother Eye is involved, is all the modern OMAC. So there's a lot of things going on, a lot of tributes happening, and it's all being pulled off really well. I had so much fun reading this. It really helped my Wednesday, I'll be honest.
That's good. I mean, isn't that what we need comics for, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I like the ones that make me feel bad. But we're going to talk about Penguin later.
Oh, that was very good, too. But so I had tons of fun. There's a little recap on page one. So if you missed issue one, for some reason don't want to pick it up digitally, then you can just start with two. You don't really need one. You start with two.
I don't think you really need one. I think you could get in. You could get it without without misunderstanding it. Yeah.
What do you think the percentage of comic book readers out there who can physically go and buy number two and not buy number one?
I
think it's like 1% of them can actually do that
You and the listening audience can go buy a number two issue without having to buy number one, go to ifanboy.com, write in the comments, and be heard.
Josh at ifanboy.com.
Yeah, or email Josh at ifanboy.com.
Don't do that.
Yes, do that one.
No, don't do that.
You can get them on Twitter at J.A. Flanagan
that's,
as well.
That's also okay.
Yeah, do it there.
Don't email.
Well, when you talk about having fun, I had a blast with Avengers 1959 number one,
Did anyone doubt that?
Exactly. It was a bit of a no-brainer. So after the mini stories in the pages of New Avengers with Bendis and Howard Chaykin drawing it, they came up with this idea of Nick Fury, with an early Avengers team in 1959, and now Howard Chaykin's taken the ball and run with it. And this is the first issue of a 5-issue miniseries, Chaykin writing and drawing it, and it picks up after the completion of that mission, and it picks up with that Avengers team kind of celebrating. Complete with a page of heads and their logos, which I was like, yes.
It was good. It was very good.
And then just when they think the challenge is behind them, somebody strikes against them, and it's off to the races again. And this was – we talk about good shaking, bad shaking. This was good shaking.
This was really good shaking.
This is really good shaking.
You know that the Lethal Weapon was at 2 where the South Africans attacked the members of
–
Yep. The members of
Riggs'
team all by themselves, like after they had done the big bust. It was like that. They had all had their big celebratory meal. They all went off on their own and all individually got attacked by this shadowy organization.
Were they in a house with stilts? Because I lived in LA for 8 years and I couldn't drive past a house with stilts with just diplomatic immunity.
No, but there's a houseboat attack, which is
there was a houseboat attack. There was a houseboat attack. There was a helicopter. Like it. What was great was that it broke the team up and it separated them. But they all had similar kind of things happening in different locations, thus tying them all together. And it was just really well done. And it ends with Nick Fury and another dude fighting with umbrella swords. It's like great. How when there's a sword hidden in an umbrella, how does it get any better than that?
But there's two of them,
right? Yeah. And sorry, not a helicopter, a plane. Dominic.
Well, there's also a hitchhiking saber tooth.
Yeah, hitchhiking saber tooth. Which I gotta give Chaykin. I mean, one bit of criticism when saber tooth is hitchhiking, and the guy who picks him up goes, "I'm doing Toronto," and saber tooth says, "You don't say. Same here." I don't hear Sabretooth saying that.
You don't say. I'm having a really hard time not talking about Lethal Weapon 2 right now. I just so you guys both know that.
I'm so glad that this is good shaking and that these 5 issues are going to be a lot of fun. Oh, God. It was funny because it's like, admittedly, some people have problems, a hard time with his art style, like the big jaws and stuff like that. But once you see it for what it is, he is one of the greats right now. And it's great that he's actively working at Marvel. I love it.
Marvel brings him in as a consultant to talk to young artists.
Yeah.
I don't know if people know that. He's considered a master.
Yeah, he's great.
At the craft. Yep. Hey, so here's the thing. I have been hearing Ron talk about X-Men Schism the whole time and talk about how it's the greatest thing ever of all time. And then what I see on the internet is a lot of other people saying things that are not the same as what Ron is saying. A lot of them. In fact, I haven't actually seen anyone else who likes the end of it. They're almost as angry as the Wall Street kids.
I had not good things to say about the last issue, and this continues with this issue. And this is the issue where Cyclops, Wolverine have their big fight. They split up. And the art by Adam Kubert was not as good as the other issues have been.
Which I do agree with that. Yeah.
A Kubert always seems to falter at the end because it's a little faster than they can handle.
Well, he only did this issue.
Then I have no excuse.
I still give Frank Cho as probably the worst art of the 5 issues, but this is he's weird. Right above that.
This continued the idea that Wolverine's stake on this whole thing is laughable, and it makes his character weird, and it doesn't make any sense.
It's very
forced to break them up.
Yeah, I mean, well, no, I think it's – I do think that I could see the argument that it's contrived or forced or like it's just catalyst to do the breakup. But I don't think that it's that out of nowhere or that ununderstandable. I think that if you look at the bigger picture of everything that's happened to Wolverine over – since House of M – that it's been leading up to this point. I think that having it happen in this quick of a time span possibly might have hurt the way it happened. But that said, it's what it is, and this is where we're at, and we're gonna get some cool stuff coming out of it. And so that I'm fine with that. I agree. It ended. It definitely ended, the Schism miniseries ended not as strong as it opened, or not as strong as it might have been with Alan Davis and some of the different artists and things like that. But I enjoyed it. And honestly, though, it left me, so basically the way it ends is Wolverine splinters off and says he can't, you know, he can't do, basically he did what Beast did a couple of years ago. Remember when Beast left and Beast is like, I don't like what you're doing here. I don't want any part of it.
Neither of us remember that.
At the viewers. I was talking to the listeners. I'm sorry, the listeners. Bang bang, stormtroopers dropping on the floor.
Connor, is this anyway, okay?
So it definitely harkens back to when Beast left the team a couple of years ago, and Wolverine takes off on a Blackbird, and he's got a bunch of the kids with him. Iceman, purely because Jason Aaron likes Iceman, and Iceman's like, yeah, I'm not being used. And they take off and they land in Westchester. The old side of the mansion. My question is, does Wolverine have the deed?
Yeah.
Is he like, what are the logistics behind rebuilding that mansion?
Do they get new cell phone numbers?
Yeah, Xavier had credit cards. Xavier had a vast fortune that they tapped in on for that mansion. Does Wolverine have money stored away? Like, what's the practice? Maybe that's why he brought Iceman, because he's an accountant. I don't like. I want to know what the practical side of this plan that Wolverine is doing is. But I don't know. But I ended up liking it.
Yeah, this again. The Wolverine side of the story was weak. It was, we're not going to fight with kids, even though you've been fighting with kids for decades, and now you're going to still fight with kids because that's what we do. He took kids with him in his little army. I mean, it just didn't make any sense, his point of view. But
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, I get.
Is there a change of address form they have to file?
Exactly.
And if so, does stuff that was going to Utopia actually get funneled? Because stuff from Queens did not get funneled. So. Yeah. And maybe Utopia has a better mail system. I don't know.
Were they getting mail service on Utopia? I mean, technically, it was a different nation.
They have the post office.
Is there a mutant?
It took forever. The free shipping from Amazon, that didn't happen.
They probably had PO boxes in San Francisco. That's my guess.
Three and a half weeks on what would be, you know, normally a couple of days. It was
the thing was, they had their own Netflix hub in Utopia, so they got their movies really fast. Quickster, whatever the fuck it's called.
It didn't read in the story, but a lot of the underlying resentment was that mail did take a really long time.
That's really what they
he's know. Got no packages for the last 5 years. He's been
yeah,
just
so he's kind of like, they're cranky about that. Like, what? He ordered some See's candy, which is local in California.
You would think
so,
you could just go get it from there's like,
yeah,
9 million
no,
in here.
It was literally like 2.5 weeks, and he paid the overnight shipping. So, I mean, you can see where this stuff just boils over and sort of spills into some of the other stuff.
See, that makes more sense than the kids thing. I could buy that.
It's delicious candy.
It's very. That's why.
Well,
he got stuck on disc 4 of The Good Wife, season 2. Never got disc 5. And he's just, what's happening? He doesn't even know.
Yep.
He sees promos for the new season. He's like, I don't understand how it got to there.
And it's not streaming, so you can't watch it. And so, yeah, it's.
Yeah. And there's actually there's a Hulu problem when it comes to Utopia, so they can't do it that way.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now it makes sense. Now I buy it.
I can't get into it.
What can you get into, though?
Oh, I could get into Chew number 21, which it wasn't quite my pick of the week, but it would have been very, very, very close. One of the things that's really fun about comic books is when you get to say, you know what, let's just flip the whole thing up and do things a little differently. And at the beginning of this issue, I thought, oh, you're not really going to do this. And then by the end, I was like, oh, they are really going to do this. He's going to have to wear a kilt. So if you're following along, Tony Chu, the entire time, his bosses hated him. I don't even remember why. I don't know if there's a reason.
He just hates him.
Yeah, I kind of like that better. Like, really hates him. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen a depiction of silent seething rage as well as what was going on there. And I believe that the name of the arc was like Applebee's Good Day or something like that.
Yeah.
Like the first page of him just being really happy.
Prancing around, dancing.
That was hysterical. Yeah, the happy.
So Chu gets honestly, I'm not sure how the structural organization of law enforcement works in that world. But he goes from the FDA to the police parking division.
They're all connected. I like the idea that they're all connected.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big brother. Great. It's just a really fun issue with all of that stuff that makes Chu really fun. And then a change of pace that, you know, it wasn't even necessarily needed, but it was welcome. And I think it's fun that, you know, if you think about it, you're like, oh, well, he's going to be in the parking division. That doesn't – he's just a meter maid. That won't lead to any stories. Well, he was in the FDA before, so – you know, take it with a grain of salt, I suppose.
I love that his new coworkers love him. They gave him a party when he arrived. They threw up on his shoulders when he was successful. I mean, this is a complete – he's so bewildered by this. He doesn't know what to do. We've entered Captain America territory with Chu now, where it's hard. It's hard to keep talking about how great this book is, but it's very good still.
And it's more just sitting around waiting for them to falter almost. You know what I mean? Like, because it's like, because every issue is like, I haven't seen, this is 21 issues or 22 if you count in the jump ahead, or I don't know how that counts, but it's consistently good.
And it's like, not even that. It's actually getting better.
It's getting better. And the thing is that it's the combination of the whatever layman's coming up with this world and the law enforcement agencies and all this sort of stuff and the different crimes. But then Guillory, like, did you see when they went when Tony Chu was the bank robbers had the big pile of money and he knocks on the door, and do you see in the background the calendar?
Yeah.
And it's a Patrick Swayze calendar. Like, like he's putting in so many little touches into the art that are just like it this is definitely a double triple read.
The sense of humor in this is very spot on with my sensibilities. How's that? Like, I really just like the humor in this. And a lot of times comics try to be funny, and a lot of comics are not funny.
Right.
I mean that as a person who's a complete comedy snob, so you take it as you will. But this comic's funny, but it's also interesting, and it just keeps being really good and in new ways. And I think that because of the weird tone of it, they're able to make decisions that other books can't make. And those choices lead to fun stuff.
True. Yeah.
Still one of the best books out there.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. A fun newcomer that was not Kick-Ass but sort of similar was The Strange Talent of Luther Strode, number one, out this week from Image Comics as well. I really didn't quite know what this was, but I liked the name.
Well, what got me to notice it was Kirkman, actually. Kirkman, considering his role at Image and what he does very little promotion on his personal Twitter. You know, like, he's off talking about what he's doing and all that sort of stuff. But he posted a picture of the cover of Luther Strode, and he's just like, guys, trust me. Get this.
So, all right. It might have been where I first saw it.
Yeah.
And he was right. It's a very similar to Kick-Ass premise. High school, tall dude, and then for some reason he gets superpowers. Doesn't really explain. It doesn't really matter. It's a little bit of like Kick-Ass and Spider-Man at the same time. Like, he gets in a fight with the school bully. It was fun, and it was really well drawn, and it was interesting looking, and I really liked this issue. It was a good intro.
I really liked it as well. I thought it was it wasn't what I expected. It wasn't. I mean, it got, you know, like, and it, you know, it just, it was good. Like, I'm on board.
I'm doing it a bit of a disservice by describing it like that, because it really doesn't feel unoriginal. It doesn't feel like something I've necessarily read before. It feels familiar in a good way.
It doesn't feel like one of the four stories that have been written already?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it does.
It is.
Listen, basically, it's Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, if I had to boil it down, it's that basic premise. Am I right?
Yeah, no, you are. Yeah, you are.
Yeah, that's it. Either that or Superman. One or the other. I can't tell.
It's Superman meets Guardians of the Galaxy.
Take it from us. I think you should go check this book out.
You should go check it out, and you can go check it out on Graphically, actually, now that Image Comics is on Graphically. You can go to Graphically.com and go to Image and just read Talent of the Strode. That's how I read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
As Josh mentioned earlier in the show, barreling at us like a freight train that cannot be stopped is New York Comic Con. It's coming up. It's October 13th to the 16th at the Jacob Javits Center in New York City. It's the end of this week if you're listening to the show early on in the week. If you listen to it late, it's already happened and you've missed out. I'm sorry. They have tons of great guests, including Frank Miller, Jeff Johns, Frank Quitely, Jason Aaron, Robert Kirkman, Kieran Gillen, Jim Lee, Mike Mignola, Scott Snyder, and tons more. I could list them all, but we'd be here all day. And we don't want to do that. We're tired. We're old men. There are also media guests, if you like that kind of thing, like Mark Hamill, who played someone called Luke Skywalker. I don't know who that is, but it's apparently a big deal. Rose McGowan, Kevin Smith, Jason Mewes, Josh, do it.
Noich.
That was awful.
Saturday's all sold out, but you can still get 3 and 4 day passes. You can go to newyorkcomiccon.com.
Speaking good like we do.
As we mentioned earlier, stay tuned to the end to hear about us at New York Comic Con, including our party. So, yes. So stay tuned to the end of the show.
Noich.
Now, did you guys know there's 2 new DC books out this week? So we got to do our rating system again.
I didn't read either.
You guys got your books, I assume. We're doing all the new DC books forever?
No, never again.
Oh, sorry.
I thought something was wrong as we started the show. I didn't know. Ratings.
So Penguin, Pain and Prejudice, number one, came out from Greg Hurwitz and Simon Kudransky. And Greg Hurwitz did the really fun run on Moon Knight, Vengeance of Moon Knight with Jerome Pena a while back. And this was really good. This was in the, very much in the vein of Jason Aaron's one shot that he did a couple years ago that was also very good, but this is going to be a whole 5-issue miniseries.
I kind of agree with you, but I kind of don't, because you're right. It is very much in the vein of the Jason Aaron one shot that he did. And I kind of felt like, all right, I've been here for this. I don't really want to read 5 issues of this, though.
Well, we'll see what it's going to be.
Yeah, no, I know. It was good. I have no problems. I thought it looked really good. I thought the tone was fine. I'm not terribly interested in it, if that makes sense.
Well, if you like Penguin as a crime boss, yeah, doing crime bossy things, this is for you.
The point being, if you like this kind of book and you read that other Penguin thing and you want more of that, and this, like, the description sounds like what you want, it's a very, very good version of that.
Yeah, that great art, sense. I thought.
Yeah, I did too.
The other book is The Huntress number one, which is another surprise. If you go along with Dan DiDio, surprise OMAC run. This is Paul Levitz and Marcus Toe, who did Red Robin beforehand. And this was actually much better than I thought it was going to be. It's Huntress in Italy kicking ass with international women smugglers. That's a crime, right? Women smuggling?
Women who are smugglers? Are they smuggling women?
The smuggling women. Yeah, women smugglers. They're chicks who smuggle.
That's what I thought. Now, that's a comic I'd read.
Sex traffickers.
Wasn't it the same? Didn't the question backups that Greg Rucka did, weren't they like the same thing?
Yes, like I said, there's only 4 stories. This is the fourth one. Yeah. Penguin,
women smugglers.
Smugglers, and the
Wire season 2 question. It's all the same thing.
This didn't feel anachronistic, I thought, for Paul Levitz, because Paul Levitz had written one of the Legion books that wasn't so good. But this was
Were there a lot of introductions in this book?
No, very sharp.
This is Svetlana. She's from Oskaraya.
Great art. Marcus Toe is really good. I was happy to see him on a book. He was one of the DC artists I was sad to not see on the New 52, but he's on this one, and it's a 6-issue miniseries. So if you like The Huntress, she's also back in her old full body costume, which is good to see, and not the Jim Lee cutout stomach one for no reason.
All right, fair enough. Thunderbolts number 164, Jeff Parker, Kev Walker, continues to be one of the best books in the market as we continue the rogue Thunderbolts who escaped to the past and now they're in World War II and they're trying to convince Captain America and Namor that they're a new super team, and we got Baron Zemo and it's awesome.
It's really fantastic.
It's like
the Zemo reveal page where he's holding the Human Torch arm.
Yep.
Is just lovely. There's a lot of Mike Mignola in this, actually, I noticed.
Yes.
Especially in those few pages. That one dude looks just like Lobster Johnson.
Yep.
I'm not complaining about this, but it was only 4 artists. this was so much fun, from Captain America's really off-putting and awkward Negro comment.
But it makes sense. That's what he would say.
Yep.
No, totally. He wasn't even being disrespectful. He was saying it's good, but it just, you're like, don't they let him say that? That's whew.
I also enjoyed his test to see if they were legit.
Yeah. I passed that test, by the way.
Oh, nice, good job.
I was like, this is a trick question. Oh, right, he was Braves.
And then Mr. Hyde, I don't follow your ruddy sport.
Yeah. It's just fun. I haven't been reading the Avengers, and this is everything that I would want the Avengers to be. So I'm completely happy with this Marvel team book.
Not as good as it gets right now. I mean, like, it's crazy, but it's fun, and it's still got that Thunderbolts hook where it's, you know, doing something different that you've never read before with the villains and all that sort of stuff. It's great. I can't wait to see where he takes this.
It's got to be pretty challenging to keep this up, but it's been good. Long time.
Yeah. So, Action Comics number 2, ratings.
Monica Lewinsky was in this. That was awesome.
Well, this is where you're going to hit the harsh reality with Action Comics, in that Marex Morales is not a monthly artist.
Right, so you're going to have Brent Anderson do finishes.
And it's not going to work.
Exactly.
Story was fantastic. I loved the story. I loved everything about the characterizations and the action in it. It's just that if you want this book to come out monthly, and that's the trade-off, when do you want the Grant Morrison book to come out?
Yep.
You're going to have to choose to have some – and if you're going to have Rags Morales be the artist, and that's – you know, maybe you shouldn't have Rags Morales be the artist, then this is what's going to happen every once in a while.
I just thought it was an even more kick in the pants that – I don't know why I said that weird. More kick in the pants to then have several pages of backup material of Rags Morales explaining the art and the approach and stuff like that when he didn't even fucking draw the issue.
I got to say, like, I did notice that the art was off a little bit, but it was more after the fact. Yeah. It didn't bother me.
Oh, I noticed it right out of the – I mean, once I saw the credits and I saw a penciler, you know.
I just didn't expect it to change so soon, so I didn't bother. But I had so much fun reading it because –
The story's fantastic.
The story's fantastic. I do not know what to expect with the Superman story. I love dumpy Lex Luthor. Like, he's just so snotty. It's awful.
He's like a snotty rich kid in a school that everyone hates.
Yeah. Yep. And everybody's yelling at everybody. It's Action Comics is what it is.
Yep.
It's got action. It's fun.
Yeah.
I want no other version of Superman. I don't want to see any other books.
I do understand some of the anger at the $4 cover price with like 20 pages. Like I was like, it's over.
Yeah.
That happened?
Yeah. All that filler. And yeah. honestly, like the story, you're right. The story is good. I'm enjoying it, but the art just totally like that. The third to last page when Lois opens the elevator and there's like it's a mess. And I love Brent Anderson. I feel like this is not fair to Brent Anderson. And
no, it's not.
Yeah, and it's just I don't know. But I did giggle at the end when I saw his Brainiac. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's cool. Yeah,
you know.
So I don't know. It's tough. It's tough. It's a tough. The comics is a tough game.
That's a tough business. Thing.
Yeah.
Ron mentioned earlier about Graphically announcing this week that Image Comics are now available day and date. So what I did when I got up in the morning on Wednesday was before my comic store opened was I went and got all my Image books, including Severed number 3.
Never read Severed in the dark. Never.
It's really creepy and good.
This is my pick of the week.
Yeah.
I thought this was just like straight start to finish creepy. I didn't know when the shoe was going to drop, and it didn't, which made it even worse. And it just looked great. Great issue.
This was the Different Strokes episode where the kids go with the old man to their apartment, and you're just wondering when that's going to happen. The bad thing.
They kept making decisions that you were like, "Don't make that decision." No.
Hey, kids, come back to my apartment. All right, old man.
Yeah.
And then you just waited for something bad to happen.
You want some beers?
How about some more beers? You want to see my tattoos? Look at my little hat on my head.
But Snyder is good. He's good.
Yeah, he co-wrote this. Scott Tuft also. I don't know who is the Didio to the Giffen here.
I don't know either. Fear Agent returns to stands as it seems as if the end is near. They've finally released Fear Agent number 31. Now that issue number 32 is done and it's going to come out next month, and it's not fair.
It's a real good looking book, but that was also a very long wait for it.
It might have been.
I don't know if it was quite that long, but there's a lot of people working on this. Like it's Tony Moore layouts.
Well, it's pencils by Mike Hawthorne with Tony Moore and finishes by John Lucas.
Yeah, but it looks good. It shouldn't with all those names is what I'm basically saying, but it comes through. I love Heath with the big white mustache.
Old Heath, yeah, that's great.
I'm seeing a lot of issues worked out in this book that are similar to issues that are worked out in Venom.
Yes, yeah, a lot of similarities there. Yep.
There's some drinking.
Yep.
There's some parent issues. But I liked it's interesting at this point we're seeing the relationship between Heath and his wife, you know, that we've been talking about all this time and why it is that way and everything. And it was nice. I'm going to be sad to see this book go.
I got to admit my favorite moment was this book bounced a lot. It bounced back in time. So you got a little more Heath and understanding his beginning of his relationship with Charlotte or Char or whatever, you know, and his mother and his family and things like that. But then in the future, whatever, there's, you know, old Heath Houston. And my favorite moment was when he's squaring off against the brain alien and the brain alien saying, you know, that's it. You're done. We've beaten you. There'll be no miraculous salvation. And Heath just jumps up and stabs him in the brain.
Well, to be fair, it's the only thing you can stab him.
Yeah, exactly. Just like, it's just that simple, good action. And it ends the way we expect Fear Agent to end, with Heath drinking on a ship and then a big shock surprise. And then big old big letters at the end, which made me sad. But
it's good.
Yeah.
It's great. It's going to be a wonderful series whenever you get all these together.
Yep. So the darling of week one of DC, Animal Man, comes back with Animal Man number 2. The darling of the relaunch. Did it continue to be a darling for you?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
My God, this is great.
It works on many levels. There's a horror element. There's a superhero element. There's a funny element. There's a family element. And it all works very seamlessly together. It's one of those things where you can tell a creator's hitting on all points. You know, they have a bunch of ideas and they're all working. And they all work together, and I think you can tell Jeff Lemire's having a lot of fun writing this book too, because there's a lot of funny parts.
Yep.
I do not want a chicken hand.
Oh, no. And Trial Foreman not only delivered, you know, similar to what he did last week, but stepped it up with the facial expressions, which I thought were great. The pout, the Animal Man's daughter pouting in the kitchen was one of my favorite panels. It was great.
I can see. I mean, like, I've heard a lot of people are either like, I really like it, or I don't know about this Trial Foreman guy. And I totally understand that, but I think that I don't know. Yeah, he's doing wonderful expressionistic comics.
Yep.
And they definitely lean more towards expressionistic without that realisticness.
Well, yeah,
but also it's there though.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that they I mean the artists that I like the best are the ones that challenge you, and this is very challenging.
Yeah. I just expressionisticness is not a word.
Right.
Expressionism also will be fine.
But so it looks like the Brothers in Arms Animal Man is tied to Swamp Thing, as we've got the red going on in Animal Man, and then in Swamp Thing we get a lot about the green. And I actually liked this issue a lot. It was wordy as hell, but I really liked it.
Yeah.
I felt as if I got it.
I'm mixed on it. I really liked once they got that explanation out of the way, but there's a double page spread in the middle, which is just, I was like, oh, that's, you're trying to fit a lot in.
Yeah. It's Bendisian.
It was
more than that, I thought. And also, I really think that the artwork is gorgeous, but I think that he got a little ahead of himself with the storytelling, and I actually had a little trouble following where I was supposed to read next a couple times.
There was one double page spread. I had that same. I'm like, okay, wait, I need to come back. And it was
it happened a couple pages, sort of in the first half. I think with that out of the way, we're fine. I like that part, but it was a bit much. And I think the storytelling suffered a little to the style.
Yeah, I agree with Theron. I think there was a lot of info, but I think it was good. And then the ending was very exciting with the twisty head monster attack. So.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, I enjoyed it more than the first issue.
So. I knew who that was on the motorcycle the second she pulled
up. Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah, so. Cool. So those are the books that came out this week. You go to ifanboy.com/comics, and you can do your see all the comics come out every week and rate and review and do your picks of the week and do your pull list and all that fun stuff. Those are the books that we enjoyed, but you enjoyed a lot other ones and a lot more of the comics. I can't all of a sudden 305 episodes. I lose the ability to talk.
We're all losing it.
So we want to take a look at what your picks of the weeks were, the iFanboy community. So if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can select your pick of the week. And coming in at number five was X-Men Schism number five with 4.8% of the pick of the week's percentages. Seems like enough people liked X-Men Schism. So, Connor, take that.
What?
Number four is Penguin Pride and Prejudice, number one, 5.6. 5.6% of the pick of the week percentages. I think that this book would have been better if it was set in like the what's her name time period. You know,
Mr. Darcy, penguin would love to see you, sir.
Exactly.
Should rather not hope.
What's the artist? What's the writer's name? Oh crap! It's gonna kill me now.
Now none of us can think of it, which makes us all dumb.
I want to say Henry James, but it's not Henry James.
Yeah, Henry James.
I know. Shit. All right, think of that. Someone look it up. Coming in at number three is Swamp Thing number two with 14.5% of the pick of the week percentage distribution. Number two was Action Comics number two with 26.6%. And coming in at number one was the aforementioned Animal Man number two with 30.7% of the pick of the week. So Animal Man holding strong.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's cool. Very impressive.
Jane Austen.
Jane Austen. Thank you. Jane Austen.
Bronte.
Bang, bang, bang. Stormtroopers falling on the floor. Okay, so that leads us into your reviews. Connor, why don't you take us away with the first one?
YYZ Kyle reviewed Detective Comics number two and gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, and 0.4% of you made this pick of the week. And YYZ Kyle said, this book is awesome. Issue one was my pick of the week when it came out, and this is my pick of the week. Great job by Tony Daniel. The splash page of the Bat Cycle is awesome. This book is exactly what I want from Detective Comics. It's a mystery. We get great internal monologue, great characterizations by Jim and Bruce, and a great compelling villain. More, please.
More, please. Did you read this, Connor?
Yeah, it was very average. I'm going to drop it.
Really?
For the first time in my life, I'm not going to buy Detective Comics.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
My comic book of life. They didn't even deal with the Joker face. We don't know what happened.
They did? That was my question. That was going to be my question.
No! I mean, I'm sure they will eventually,
don't
but
yell
they,
at me.
They didn't deal with the Joker face. In fact, Gordon got his face cut up, too.
Cut up or off?
Cut up. It's all like ugly suture back together. So who knows? I'm dropping it. It's very average. I'm not really enjoying it. And I just wanted to know what happened to the Joker. That's really what I wanted to know.
You see, that sucks. When you end with such a cliffhanger and there's no payoff, that's like, come on. I don't even make comics and I know that.
Yeah.
Well,
average. You should know. I mean, it certainly wasn't bad. It just wasn't.
I really thought.
You should know.
Let's be honest. You do this for a living. I mean, if you're not in this, then we need to have a talk. I thought the comment section on this was really interesting because half the people were like, this was great, and half the people were right.
I don't want to say it's bad. It wasn't bad. It just was very average.
You know what? Really average is starting to feel worse than bad.
Yeah.
Because at least it's fun to talk about really bad stuff.
Yeah.
So Dix.
Comics the first time since the early 80s.
Wow. Dix, D-I-X, talked about Justice League International number 2. I love it because you don't have to remember the numbers. Gave the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5, and the pick of the week percentage was 0.2%. And he says, we've got more from the characters that were established in the previous issue and a few others that are a bit more vocal this time. The series setup is more or less done, and the issue is more about revealing a little about how these characters interact. That is not well. But nothing stands out about the situation. No relationships are outstandingly interesting or entertaining. They're simply adequate, like the art. This book does get to the action, though, so for those who want to see this team doing things with their powers, it's here, and quicker than some other team-up books in the 52. But aside from some of those minor advantages, it's still some stilted character writing and general lack of anything truly impressive means that there are better books out there.
I could see this opinion. I probably give this like a 3 or 4 as well. I still enjoyed it because I like the characters and I like the art. I mean, it is average comic book art, but done well. But I feel as if it's lost a little bit of the joy and the fun. Like there wasn't enough humor in this issue.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the things that Winnick's Justice League Lost, Generation Lost series really had was a lot of fun in it.
Right.
I still really enjoyed this. There's the British characters grading. Now, you talk about unrealistic female characters. This is a female character written from the point of view of an older male.
Yeah.
Who just wants to have sex all the time.
That's what ladies are like, right?
But there's still elements in this stuff that are really fun. I like it's kind of a throwback old school team superhero book action, which I like. I mean, it's certainly not blowing the doors off, and I can see, you know, a couple months down the line where it's still like, you know, still okay, you know, dropping it. But for now, I'm having a good time reading it.
See, I held it, and I was like, no good can come of this eventually.
I would say you should get OMAC instead of Justice League.
I didn't get either, but
well, I know if you had to choose between the two, I gave you a crossroads, and I'd like,
shoo.
Yeah.
Anyway. I like to have choices made for me.
Yeah. All right. Well, buy OMAC. All right. So go to ifanboy.com/comics and do your pull list and do your ratings and write your reviews and do your pick of the week, and you can get on a future show like these guys over here.
Yeah.
So now that we're back to our original format, we're going back to your listener feedback or audience feedback, viewer feedback.
Audience participation.
Yes. So our first
female. You're stupid right now.
Our first female. The Blue Angels are flying over nonstop, and it's freaking me out.
What are they, dropping nerve gas?
I don't know. All I know is that these planes aren't supposed to be flying through cities as low as they are. I'm just saying.
You're supposed to enjoy it, damn it.
No,
it's an F-18A Hornet.
All right. So our first email comes from Callum from the Isle of Man. Which is kind of awesome.
No speed limits.
I know. So Callum says, now that we're through the first month of the new DC Universe, it feels as though we have a decent handle on many of the obvious things that have been added or dropped from previous continuity. I was wondering if there are any plot lines that have not yet finished the old DCU that you are...
I saw this email and thought the same thing when it was in the inbox.
That you were particularly sad to see fall by the wayside. And by this, I mean threads like those raised in Flash Rebirth, where a dark future for the Flash's children was hinted at. Now we will find out where that was headed. So yeah, any plot threads that you feel frustrated by their incomplete status?
Not that one.
Not that one at all.
I literally don't remember anything.
Oh, I'm trying to think. What questions?
I couldn't think of anything.
It's that's one of the brilliant things about it is we've been so inundated with these new stories that it has kind of washed away a lot of the old DCU, in my mind at least, and I guess Josh's is not. I don't remember much of
it. Well, the thing is I wasn't reading much of it by that point, and the stuff that I was reading or knew about it
wasn't very good.
No, I was going to say it's pretty – Batman's still going. You know,
Batman's continuing, Green Lantern's continuing, right. And everything else. Superman was bad. Wonder Woman was bad. You know, Flash sort of sputtered to the end. Justice League was bad. Justice Society was bad. I mean, we were talking a lot a few months ago before the relaunch about how bad DC was creatively. It's because all the good people were working on these other books secretly. But I can't think of anything. I wish they had continued that. There's really nothing. Everything either finished or, you know, or I don't remember or didn't like.
I mean, like Batgirl, would that be something?
But it finished. I mean, the story finished.
Right.
They finished it in a very truncated fashion, but they finished with the when we talked to Brian Q. Miller at San Diego, he said that it finished where it would have finished had they never had the relaunch. It just had to happen a year sooner. So the story's finished. They just, you know, the ones that didn't, and I don't remember them. I don't care. Flash Children,
a pox on their house.
We're on record as not liking them in any way, shape, or form, so we're happy that story never finished. So, you know. It's a new day. Get on board.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can't think of a single goddamn thing that I'm worried about.
Why was that funny? I don't know, but it was.
I don't know. Plot lines.
Not a goddamn thing.
Plot lines.
All right, next email.
Anthony Mathers, who was one bat for you, which sounds kind of like a come on.
It's, yeah, I know. It's, I thought of the same way, like for you.
It's like an erotic masseuse who's into Batman.
Anthony Mathers says, after finishing Walt Simonson's Thor Omnibus, Life Achievement Unlocked, I wonder if there are any other works or collections where the writer and the artist were mostly the same person. I can only think of Jeff Lemire's Sweet Tooth.
Oh, my.
Yeah, John Byrne, Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
John Byrne, Superman. John Byrne, X-Men.
No, he didn't do X-Men.
Well, just all of Will Eisner's – I mean, not all of it, but Will Eisner, The Spirit, like all those years of The Spirit.
Terry Moore's Echo. Terry Moore's
Shares of Paradise. Yeah, Jeff Smith's Bone. Yeah.
Box Office Poison.
I can't help it. I want that.
One at a time.
Blankets.
Simon and Kirby, because they both drew it.
Right. Frank Miller's Sin City. Frank Miller's 300. Frank Miller's
Holy Dark Terror.
Dark Knight Returns.
Holy Terror.
Let's see.
Tony Daniels' amazing Batman run.
Out of DCU right now.
Doesn't happen much at Marvel these days.
No.
Art Spiegelman's Mouse.
Trying to think of the – well, you know, in graphic novels and sort of indie cartooning, it happens a lot more.
See, yeah, superhero stuff, it's more rare than not.
It's difficult to stay on track now. Like that's – I mean, the way that everything is produced, I think it's really hard for a writer-artist to keep up with the sort of schedule. I know Duncan Rouleau was doing something, but it stopped. He couldn't keep up with the schedule.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think in mainstream. John Byrne was really the last
Day Tripper.
One to do it. Regularly.
Yeah, no, he John Byrne owned that in the 80s and 90s. He did all that stuff at DC and Marvel almost.
Spider-Man.
Not all the stuff he did, but a lot of it was.
Yeah, yeah. did George Perez, was his Wonder Woman, was that written and drawn by him?
I'm not going to go back and check.
Yeah.
That's how bad Superman was.
No, I meant Wonder Woman.
I know, just wiped it out of
the... I see, okay. All right, last email.
CJ from Albany, New York says, I'm lucky enough to have a wife. Oh, wait, there's more. Who is not only accepting of my comics hobby, but is a burgeoning comic fan herself. I'm writing to ask you guys for some book recommendations. My wife was a born and bred New Yorker growing up in Flushing, Queens. I'm sorry. She left the city about this past summer to let me pursue my legal career. It has meant everything to me, but as a result, she misses everything about New York. The people, the atmosphere, the sights, the sounds, and most of all, the food. On our last trip to the local comic shop, she picked up the New York Five by Brian Wood. She picked up the New York Five by Brian Wood and Ryan Kelly. With each page turned, she excitedly exclaimed, look, there's this thing I know. It was great to see her read something that gave her so much joy. So my question is to you, besides the New York 4 and 5, are there any books that you can recommend that capture the essence of New York on each page? And it's every page. It has to be.
I think less worry about the comic. Dude, there are law schools in New York, man. let's look at the basis of the issue.
He could have gotten hired by a firm outside of New York.
Maybe also, it's a lot cheaper to have to live somewhere else if you're going to law school if you're in the middle.
But no,
of
he says to pursue my legal career. He didn't say anything about school, so maybe he got a job at another firm. There are firms in New York, man. Yeah, I think let's look at the core issue. You're building resentment because you made your wife move somewhere she doesn't want to be at. I think you should get back to New York as soon as possible.
I can tell you this: there's an opening in Queens.
Yeah, books that play – well, I mean
I want to say local right away because if you really
like
that
book – It's just that one issue of it, though.
Yeah, but it's only one issue of the whole thing. Yeah. But still, I still think you should read it.
She would – I think that's a really good book. There's a lot of time and place, you know, stuff all over the country, and the New York chapter is really good, I think, in general.
Have you tried Marvel Comics from 1961 through
– Yesterday?
Yesterday? No. Yeah, I mean, they used to be really, 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 really New York City based, although I don't think that's going to be what you're looking for.
Yeah, DMZ!
Ultimate Spider-Man somewhat.
DMZ is actually not a bad choice because it is very specific to the whole thing, although, you know, that really
Rubble.
Captures... Yeah, but that still really captures a quote-unquote New York state of mind.
Hmm.
That's the first
Box
time...
Box Office Poison.
Box Office Poison is a good one. Alex is from the city, and all of his books take place in the city, I think. Not too cool, but Tricked did.
I'm trying to think what else is there. Ghost Rider in the 90s?
That's not a good suggestion.
Well, there's books like, you know, Daredevil and Spider-Man are all specific to New York, but that's
Daredevil,
not
I mean,
really
Daredevil is, is...
But not in the same way.
Not in the same way, yeah. That's a good question. I mean, it's a good question.
It's funny because a lot of comics do take place in New York City, but it's this it's actually Toronto. So
she should read Cavalier and Clay. Even though it's not a comic, but it's a book about comics and it takes place in New York and it's a
I agree. You know, it actually is a lot of fun to read comics history She's not going to want to do this. But if you read like the books about the Golden Age, about Stan Lee or Jack Kirby or Joe Simon or Will Eisner or any of those, like the books about them, they're all New York City centric. And so they're like, well, our offices were up on 37th and 8th at that point.
You know.
Like it brings you right there. You can smell the fabric textile district.
Will Eisner's New York Life in the Big City?
Yes. Yeah. A lot of New York, a lot of Will Eisner's stuff.
I did a quick search and I found some blog of some people talking about comics at the place in New York and somebody asking for suggestions. And in the comments, they're all like throwing out stuff that we've already said. And then the one person just said, anonymous said, Fables. I'm like, all right, yeah, Fables did take
place. It's true.
I know, yeah. Sorry.
Also takes place upstate.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
And in Fabletown.
So in Westchester?
Local number 6 is the issue of local that you're thinking of, by the way.
Yeah.
The Alcoholic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. My New York Diary by Julie Duché.
You're just reading somebody else's blog post right now.
So what? I said I was reading a blog post. You
can do it as long as you don't let people know.
We're
supposed to be the experts on this.
Listen about Jeez. That. All right,
there's
cool.
There's a good section of Preacher that takes place in New York City.
Yeah.
Yes, there is.
Which is actually really good, too, because Garth Ennis lived there.
Punisher. So
it was Punisher, authentic.
Yeah. Daredevil Hell's Kitchen's one, man. That's what I mean. Reed Bendis' run on Daredevil and Maleev.
If you want that feeling, I mean, Miller Daredevil really like went extra out of his way to capture the feeling of New York City at the time.
Yeah. All right. So if you have any questions, you can shoot us an email at contact@ifanboy.com. We're here to help. Usually we do voicemails, but we're going to cut them this week because we got to talk about the New York Comic Con. But if you want to call in, you can call the voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. And the aforementioned New York Comic Con that we've been dreading is right around the corner. It is four days away. Dear
Lord. They sponsored the show. We can't say we were dreading
it. I'm so excited for it.
It's honestly the highlight of the year.
It really is.
I look forward to it more than I look forward to anything.
Yes. So as we mentioned earlier, New York Comic Con is running from October 13th to the 16th at the Jacob Javits Center. We will be there. So if you want to come see us, we're going to have a booth or table or whatever at number F1. And it's going to be in the podcast area of the con floor. No guarantees we'll be there. We're going to be running around the floor doing interviews and stuff like that. But if you walk by, there's a good chance we'll be there. And there's also one of our other sponsors, Comedy Central, the Weird Al Yankovic live DVD. They're going to have a bunch of stuff that you can get for free that you can get at our table. So swing by, check it out. Even if we're not there, feel free to take whatever's there. Well, not whatever's there, but the denoted free stuff. And hopefully we'll see it at our table. If you don't catch us at the table, you can catch us at the con. I'm actually moderating a panel. I'm moderating the second Food and Comics panel. We did it in Chicago at C2E2, and this time we're doing it again in New York. It's on Friday at 2:45, and it's going to be me moderating it with C.B. Cebulski, Brian Azzarello, and
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And Chef Wiley Dufresne.
Andy Dufresne, he's
the chef the owner and chef of WD50, which is one of the best restaurants in Manhattan. So if you're curious about the cross section of comics and food, you're gonna want to come to this panel. You guys were in the audience at the C2E2 one. It's not as crazy as it sounds, right?
No, and it was standing room only basically in Chicago. It was packed.
What is Brian Azzarello doing there?
I don't know.
Glowering.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently he likes to eat.
He has to eventually, I suppose.
Yeah. So you can come watch me. You can watch me panically moderate a panel.
That's a stupid question. I don't know what to ask.
Well, Mr. Azzarello, I'm sorry. Mr. Azzarello.
I can't wait for that.
So
I'm not going to answer that.
And then finally, Friday night, October 14th.
It's about food.
October 14th, we've teamed up with our friends at Shirts for a Cure for the awesome iFanboy New York Comic Con party, Drinks for a Cure. It's all, not all, but proceeds from your drinks that you buy at Idle Hands Bar will go towards helping fight breast cancer. So please come for a good cause. And we're welcoming special guest DJs, Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, who you know and love from their work on Phonogram and more recently on Uncanny X-Men. And Jamie's got X-Men Season 1 coming out. They're going to be spinning some of their favorite music. I'm also going to be DJing. So it should be a fun night.
No one asked me or Connor to DJ.
There was only so many slots. So come out to Idle Hands on it's at 25 Avenue B between 3rd Street and 2nd Street down on the Lower East Side in Alphabet City. And the music starts at 9 p.m. and we're going to go till the end of the night. And we'll probably be there before 9. So if you want to come hang out, we'll be there.
Is Brian Azzarello coming?
He's DJing after me, actually.
I would. What do you do? He said that to Ron once, walked right up to him. What do you do? Who are you?
And I had nothing. I had no response.
And then he walked away.
Yeah. And then he turned to Joe Casey and goes, you're Joe Kelly, right?
Oh.
Anyway. So that's all the scoop on New York Comic Con. It's going to be a blast. I can't wait to see you. It's always great to see, even though none of us live in New York anymore, it's good to be at our hometown show. So
look, we are excited for it. It's not New York Comic Con. It's just going to another con that we're tired. It's the end of the year.
It's the last con of the year. Yeah, it's going
to
be good. So,
says you. I'm hoping not to get mugged.
So New York Comic Con, it'll be great to see you there. Also, though, before New York Comic Con, comics do come out, and you definitely don't want to miss Shade Number One, the first issue in the Maxi series, written by James Robinson. And we talked to James Robinson on iFanboy Don't Miss, which you can get on Monday, tomorrow. You subscribe to Don't Miss in the iTunes or go to iFanboy.com to listen to it. And it's great to hear James Robinson say some very enlightening things about writing Shade and working in the DC universe. So this is definitely one not to be missed. So don't miss it.
That's good. That's appropriate with the title and all. We also have the iFanboy Talksplode podcast, and there has been a spate of them lately. And the last one that I did was posted. It was nearly 2 hours of conversation with myself and Blair Butler, who you know from G4 TV and Attack of the Show, and about her new comic Heart, and Charles Soule, who's the writer of the 27 series from Image Comics. And we were talking about making comics and breaking in and writing and, you know, producing your own independent comics and all the stuff that goes into that, and what it's like to work with a publisher like Image or some of the other smaller publishers and things like that. Great conversation. We all had a really good time having it. And I think there's definitely a lot to learn if you're into that. You want to make comics, you just want to know more about what's behind the scenes. Is a real good show. Very proud of it. So you you can pick that up on the website.
It's a long listen, but it's worth every minute of it, honestly. Good job.
Thank you.
If you're a longtime listener by iFanboy, you know that every year we like to showcase the Halloween costumes you guys all wear out on Halloween. So go to iFanboy.com. There'll be a post in the Buzzable Bar about Halloween costumes. Send those in. I'll keep in mind this month. Take photographs and send them in. We're going to do a big roundup at the end of the month like we do every year with your Halloween costume. So go to iFanboy.com. Right in the Buzzable Bar next to the post about New York Comic Con, you can find the post about Halloween.
Apparently, Josh is a big fan of the cosplay. So who knew? So
I'm just saying, let him live.
He'll be dressing up this year.
I won't.
All right, so you can find all the costumes, all the info about New York Comic Con, the Talksplode, Don't Miss, all that other great stuff at ifanboy.com, the wonderful website every day of the week that we slave over. Some great writing from all the other staff at ifanboy.com. You can all find it there. Read to it. Subscribe to the RSS feed. However you like to get it, enjoy it. We're here for you. You can also check out all of our links to our social networks and things like that at ifanboy.com/about. And that's got everybody on the staff and all their Twitters and all that fun stuff. So connect with us. We want to hear from you. So last week we had an anthology show. I went to the Alternative Press Expo. I talked to some creators, including those cute Reed Gunther guys. I just want to hang out with them the whole day. Like, they were so nice and they were just so energetic and young. And anyway,
we're young. I looked at the
shower break, Ron, before you shot that. What happened?
I was struggling with the long hair situation. That's the problem. But
so you decided to just.
So you went with Don Draper?
Yeah, I got a cut. It's back to normal. Don't worry. I was trying something. I got
a
lot of
pomade.
I got a lot of comments, by the way, that weekend.
Well, you get compliments when it's different.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you cut your hair. It's nice.
Anyway, so in addition to my hair was Paul listening to some Spider-Man records and Josh talking about sound effects and lettering. It was a good show. I liked that show. I don't know.
I like that show.
Yeah. Next week, we're talking about Identity Crisis, which gets the absolute treatment. So we revisit that event book from, Jesus, like nearly 10 years ago. So.
Mm-hmm.
Good time. So get that on Wednesday on ifanboy.com.
If I feel like it. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. And we need you to call the voicemail line. We have to restock our voice.
We're voicemail depleted,
you're just doing DC books. You don't need me anymore. We do. Call up. Leave your name. Don't talk for too long. Give us a question, something interesting. It's on you, man. And thank you.
And finally, if you like this show or the video show or the Don't Miss show, or just write a review. Tell us what you think about us or Brian Azzarello. We'll take either one in the iTunes reviews. It helps people find the show.
Yes.
As people are, there are some people out there who have a hard time having a sense of humor. I just want to say that Wonder Woman was my favorite book of the relaunch. So
I like Brian Azzarello. Don't get me wrong. We have talked since then.
I'm terrified of him.
He's intimidating.
People are going to think that we're making jokes.
Right.
Guy's very talented is what I'm saying.
He's one of the best writers around. He's a great guy. A little intimidating. Short on the patience, maybe. but hey, if you go back to C2E2 to our video show, I made him laugh.
Best interview ever of him.
Yep. Thank you. We might just revisit that maybe later this week.
It was like 17 seconds.
Yeah, it was in and out. That's all it was. I can tell you, you aspiring podcasters, doing your interviews, talk about the interview with the subject beforehand. That helps.
It does.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to look stupid. Wait until you start it. Yeah. Pre-produce that shit.
So that's some free advice for you. So until next week, after we've survived, I don't know how we're going to do next week's show, to be honest with you.
Writer show.
Yeah, we might. So until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. I'm sorry, Brian.